So we had several cases. So I'm going to present at the end of these slides a cross-section of the patients that we had, so you can kind of see the different symptoms that we were looking at with our patients. So quickly, I'll go through an outline from the CDC. There are new guidelines from 2015, as you know, testing, treatment, and most importantly, the cases. We just recently have a publication in MMWR, Notes from the Field, so you can check that out. It has a great summary of the cases that we saw in Michigan. Epidemiology is not known in the U.S., but if you look up the statistics, you'll find most of the information is from the U.K. Interestingly, from your Eurosurveillance, you'll see that in 2003, they found one case. In 2004, 28. Then 2005, and I'm skipping years here, but 2005, 220. And 2014, they had 679 cases. Positive chlamydia samples from asymptomatic HIV-infected MSM patients in the UK now are tested for LGV. They have found approximately 25% of those are identified with asymptomatic LGV. But what are the symptoms that you would be seeing? There's, you know, genital symptoms and rectal symptoms. So genital symptoms, just as a reminder, LGV is caused by chlamydia, Trachomonas serovirus, usually L2. The symptoms that can be seen would be self-limited genital ulcer, as well as a tender inguinal lymph node that can be sometimes unilateral. The guidelines mention that most of the time, this ulcer will be gone by the time the patient presents to the office. In our case, we saw between 5 and 7, I forgot to check the numbers exactly, ulcers that did not go away. Patients came in, they had been there for a month. One patient had been there for a few months. That ulcer also had tested positive for herpes, but two courses of acyclovir did not resolve the ulcer, not till he got on treatment for chlamydia. For LGV, did it go away. Rectal symptoms are the most common symptoms that you will see in patients. Proctitis, proctocolitis, they will have things like inflammatory disease symptoms, rectal discharge, anal pain, constipation, fever, and tenesmus. So tenesmus being rectal spasms. Patient reported to me that he felt like he had to sit on the toilet every 30 minutes. Oh, it was disrupting his ability to work. Patients have told me constipation. They were not able to move their bowels except if they were taking a laxative every day to keep things moving. Other subjective complaints would be my hemorrhoids are flaring up. So you would just be presented with all kinds of different subjective complaints about really what's going on, and sometimes it would only come up during the review of systems, so you had to be really attentive to it. So what happens if we don't treat it? What happens if we miss it? Patients can end up with an invasive systemic infection. They can end up with fistulas. And as you're sitting here thinking about what fistula patients have we had over the last few years that we've missed this diagnosis. And there's other sequelae can happen, arthropathy, et cetera. So how do we test? So we started with our usual testing, which is anal swab for chlamydia, gonorrhea, urine, throat, and also, which surprised me at the first patient, was swabbing the actual genital ulcer for chlamydia. So what do we do with that test? We send it, the only place you can get it confirmed for LGV is through the CDC. So the CDC will take the leftover sample from your lab. You have it sent to the state lab. The state lab will forward it to the CDC, and then that will be get tested for LGV and give you that confirmation. This test is not FDA approved for clinical care, only for research and for outbreak purposes only. So the sample of the result test will look like this. This is the test that they do, the diagnostic assay, and the result will read positive for LGV or positive for non-LGV chlamydia. How do we go through this process? I kind of went through it already. There is a form that needs to be filled out. It's a two-page form. We have it populated with the right-hand side being the providers and where it goes to. And then the left-hand side will be your patient information. So I just keep it on my desktop, and then I just repopulate the patient information and then forward it to my lab, and it gets forwarded with the sample. Dr. Chen is the physician, the doctor who's taking care of these samples at the CDC, and he has a poster downstairs, LB late breaker number 4, if you're interested. He did some testing on samples from New York. So the guidelines for treatment, I short-formed it here. I don't have the alternative regimens here. I kept it at doxy twice a day for 21 days. There are other regimens, as I mentioned, but anecdotally, we had a few patients that Zithromax was tried, as mentioned in the guidelines, and it was not effective. The infection did not go away until they were given doxy. So what do we do with partners? We get them in, first of all, and get them treated according to the guidelines, and if the tests are actually positive versus just having exposure, then they would get the full 21 days of treatment. So they are classified. We had to talk with our Michigan Department of Health and Human Services about coming up with some case classifications for our patients, and also these are in the guideline. So we have confirmed cases that have been confirmed as LGV from the CDC. Probable cases are cases who are positive for chlamydia, they're symptomatic, their symptoms resolved with the doxycycline, and you just have a high suspicion. We may miss the LGV testing on these patients. For instance, if the sample wasn't caught, the result wasn't caught within the time frame to send the sample off, et cetera, and then suspect cases. Proctitis diagnostics, the title of my talk was, correct diagnosis, and this is where we ran into some problems. Patients will present to the ER or other specialists, GI, surgical, et cetera, and so they have had, and patients that were in my facility, patients had abdominal pelvic CAT scans. And as you can read, some of these results that came back were pretty concerning, including the patient who was diagnosed or called as anal rectal cancer from the CAT scan. Other patients had colonoscopies and biopsies. As you can see, this must have been pretty traumatic for these patients. So this is my summary of the number of cases that we have had. These are in my facility. If you check out Jim Kent, who's our epidemiologist from the state of Michigan, his poster is downstairs also. I forgot what number it was, Jim. It's WP76, thank you. So there's more cases, as mentioned, in the state of Michigan. But in our facility, we had 24 confirmed cases that were positive with LGV, 22 with proctitis, one with a penile ulcer. One patient had a penile ulcer, and the anal swab was also positive for LGV. I was with my NP student, and we were looking at this ulcer that was very small and dry. And I was teaching her, and I was saying, I probably won't get much of a sample from this ulcer, so I'm not sure that I'll sample it with a swab. And the patient was overhearing me, and he said, well, it was draining this morning. Okay, so I swabbed it, and I was shocked. It came back positive for chlamydia, positive for LGV. We had probable cases that mostly were occurring before we had access to the CDC testing. The first three or four of our patients with penile ulcers, we didn't have access yet. And when you do the research and look up the stats, you will find very few reports from the literature about penile ulcers with positive LGV confirmation. One patient got reinfected, and one patient didn't take his original therapy. So I'm going to read my cases as a cross-section of them. I have three to report, and I did pass them out because if I talk too fast or not too clearly. So the first patient was our first patient. I saw him. I'm in HIV care. He came to the clinic last year. This was from last summer, and he had this ulcer that was not resolving. It had been a month. He's in his 40s. He has sex with males. He's HIV positive for the last 15 years. He's stable on HIV meds, undetectable viral load, and CD4 greater than 500. On exam, it was a small 0.5 open lesion on the shaft of the penis. Syphilis test was already done before he came in, and it was negative, and I was sure that it was herpes. I swabbed it for herpes, and that has caused a little bit of pain and a little bit of bleeding. I guess I was aggressive, but the swab was negative for herpes. And so a week later, I thought, well, maybe it's an injury. Maybe it's going to resolve on its own. A week later, he came back in, and it was still not gone, and it had not even changed. He also, at this time, had developed this slightly tender, large lymph node on the right inguinal area, very obvious. At this visit, I called in Dr. Crane, who's a physician in our office, and he said, I think we should swab the ulcer for chlamydia. I'd never done that before. And we looked at it as being possible LGV. So what we're using to swab these areas are the swab that you would use for an endocervical chlamydia testing. We also did a sample of urine for gonorrhea and chlamydia. Given the possibility or probability of LGV, we started him on doxycycline, 100 milligrams twice a day for 21 days. The urine sample was negative for chlamydia and gonorrhea. The penile ulcer was positive for chlamydia. He reported resolution of the symptoms on doxy, but we were not yet aware of availability of the testing at the CDC, so we were not able to confirm his diagnosis. So this above case, I called Jim and I said, we think we have LGV. Is this reportable in our state? And it was. We know that it's not reportable in all the states, so that's why, as I mentioned earlier, we don't have numbers for the states. So partner services were initiated for this patient, and he was able to give DIS, who are awesome people, Columbo, I call them. He was able to give them some but not complete information about this partner. The person was eventually found and brought into the STD clinic. Another call out to STD clinics. They're amazing and do so much awesome work. This guy is in his mid-20s. He denied any symptoms. He's not in any care whatsoever. And so complete STD screening, including HIV testing, was done. The anal swab was positive for chlamydia. And at this time, we had ability to confirm it. It was confirmed LGV, but he was also found to be HIV positive. And so now he's in care at the clinic, and he's always placed on doxy at the time. My third final patient is a patient who was seen in the ER. So he's MSM. He's in his 40s. He's been followed in our clinic for several years. He's on meds, undetectable, which is what the most population of all these cases were, people who were HIV positive, of course, but they were also doing very well on their medications, very established. This guy's CD4 is greater than 1,200. So he went to the ER. He was complaining of constipation, rectal pain, blood in the stool, and the symptoms were described in the ER note as tenesmus, and he was prescribed lidocaine and ibuprofen and discharged. But he was given a quick referral to the surgeon, and he saw the surgeon a few days later complaining of pain with moving his bowels. He was scheduled and had an anal exam under anesthesia to assess for an anal abscess a few days later. An ulcerated anal mass was found on the exam and biopsy was obtained. The biopsy result was tubular adenoma, chronic inflammation, reactive lymphoid aggregates. He was seen for follow-up by the surgeon, still complaining of pain. An abdominal pelvic CAT scan was done a week later. The results were suggesting, as you saw earlier on the slide, anal cancer, regional metastatic involvement with fecal stasis. He had a follow-up visit with the surgeon 2 weeks later. He had a 15-pound weight loss, ongoing pain reported as 8 out of 10. Now they did a colonoscopy, and several biopsies were obtained. That did show progression of the mass, but the biopsy results were negative and did not confirm the results of the CAT scan. Around this time, he was coming in for his routine HIV visit. So all of this was done outside of our reach. His provider obtained the anal swab for gonorrhea and chlamydia, and given our current outbreak, he was given a probable diagnosis of LGV, placed on doxycycline for 21 days. The diagnosis was confirmed by the CDC as LGV, and his symptoms resolved. 4 months later, he's gained his weight back, and the anal swab is negative for chlamydia at that result. So I want to end by saying thanks to our Michigan State Health Department, DAHHS, and the staff at the CDC. It's been amazing. We've done conference calls and gotten through these cases. I'm still sending results into the CDC. I've gotten quite a few non-LGV cases recently, but I'm sending everybody who has anal chlamydia into those samples to be checked out. As we know from the literature, it can be asymptomatic, so just keeping an eye out, it would be interesting. All right, thank you.
As our colleagues come up, I just wanted to ask several questions from your patients. Were all of them HIV infected? All the 24? All these 24? Can somebody fix the... Oh, sorry, for Hunter. Oh, sorry. So all of them were HIV infected, and then what about concomitant STIs?
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. So besides patients that were...
Besides patients that were already HIV infected in our office, patients who were brought through the STD clinic as far as partner notification, there were a few that were found to be HIV positive at that visit. We also found a handful of patients diagnosed concomitantly with hepatitis C, as well as what you would expect, syphilis and gonorrhea.
Thank you. So three great cases. I wanted to ask one issue regarding the presentation of the ulcer to Christine, actually, because in terms of your research on herpes and in terms of the presentation when a patient presents with a penile ulcer, what is the evaluation, you know, at University of Washington that you do in the clinic, and are you looking for chlamydia in all penile ulcers?
These are great cases, and I just want to say I'm really impressed that you did make the diagnosis on that index case. Reading the history and hearing the presentation with the ulcer that initially came, I probably would have thought that perhaps that was a late ulcer. It sounded consistent with a herpetic lesion, and even though it swabbed negative, I probably would have attributed it to just a resolving herpes ulcer. I think the fact that it didn't resolve was your, you know, key to making the diagnosis. And then also, I just wanted to mention the lymphadenopathy as a, you know, having tender unilateral lymphadenopathy would be different than what you would expect with a recurrent herpes. When we see a genital ulcer, we typically will swab the ulcer for PCR, or sometimes culture, but we really prefer PCR because it is more sensitive for HSV. I do not in my practice typically swab for chlamydia. I don't know that anyone else does either.
Did he have a urethral or urine chlamydia evaluation at that time as well?
Yes.
And it was negative.
Stand up.
It was negative.
It was negative.
Because I have to say, I've always historically been skeptical about the whole cutaneous ulcer part of LGV. The notion that any cutaneous surface can heal so you see nothing at all in 2 or 3 days is obviously fanciful. That doesn't happen no matter what, whether it's a cigarette burn or an abrasion or herpes. Once the initial pathology is gone, it takes a while for things to heal. So the notion that it was an evanescent ulcer that now looks totally normal has always been peculiar, mm-hmm. and I suspect most or many, if not a large majority of LGV, actually is urethritis or cervicitis that as opposed to ulcer. But clearly cases like yours, and there are a few other anecdotes, show that it's not the cutaneous ulcer isn't totally fanciful. My guess is, however, it's probably part of the picture in a minority of cases, and it's not just what we miss.
I think it's a really important point because it was a very astute clinician that picked this up, which is not a common presentation, as Hunter talks about. And thinking about the presentations in terms of how we're teaching our medical students, and I'm continued to be amazed in terms of people missing this diagnosis and not thinking about it.
Residents, you probably have to tell me, well, I didn't think of LGV because I didn't see an ulcer.
Well, I think the other point, they didn't see the adenopathy. So I wanted to ask you, Nina, about what is going on in terms of the pediatrics and adolescents. And I know that there was a couple of years ago at the pediatric ID meetings, there was a case of LGV as one of these unknown cases. And in terms of the presentation, the rectal presentation is not really resonating, I think, with a lot of folks, especially our GI and surgical colleagues. So I wanted you to comment about that.
Yeah, so definitely in the pediatric adolescent world, I don't think we're thinking about it enough. And I think that's, you know, where sexual history really comes into play in a detailed and sexual history. Which I think a lot of providers, you know, in both the pediatric world and the adult world might not feel so comfortable asking, given the fact that LGV is most common among MSM and most common among MSM with HIV. I think that's the population that one we should be thinking about. But also in your patients that are coming in that are non-HIV infected, a lot of these cases with LGV, they're new diagnoses of HIV as well. So we should be keeping it in the back of our minds, but that, you know, we're not going to be able to find it unless we ask the right questions, and not just are you sexually active, but what types of sex are you having, to be able to really do the proper screening. We recently had a case very similar, just more of proctitis type of symptoms. And I think, you know, for like a young young adult or even older adolescent, a lot of people will go down the IBD route and before even asking the sexual history questions, then lead to the million-dollar workup with colonoscopy and all that. But I think once you have the history, it warrants screening.
Hunter, you have a comment?
Well, the third case is very typical of the severe end of the spectrum, even to the point of the extent of pathology shown up on imaging and that sort of thing. So Tom Quinn, who we all know as one of the world's premier STI HIV prevention folks, when he began his fellowship in STDs with King back in the early 1980s, studied Guillain-Barré syndrome, first began to observe cases that had been misdiagnosed as Crohn's disease. In fact, the histology is almost identical to that of colonic Crohn's disease. So, and very extensive and more recent studies, probably as in your patient, show really very marked degrees. I mean, you have rectal mucosa that's an inch and a half thick. I mean, just the amount of inflammation is very, very dramatic, and it can extend well up to the sigmoid colon and beyond. And that's the kind of syndrome that the GI folks and the anal and rectal surgeons, they're not even going to be thinking STDs or LGD at all. So you need to be the bulwark of information to keep them and our other colleagues aware of these syndromes at that end of the clinical spectrum.
So we're running a little short on time, but I wanted, Hunter, I wanted you to comment about this because you've written a nice editorial about this. And this is the issue of azithromycin versus doxy. And I want to talk about the issues where you're doing extragenital screening and you come up with a positive chlamydia test. And the concern that comes up is that we don't have a point-of-care test for LGV. We know that from certain series that LGV can be asymptomatic in 15% to 20% of patients. So number one, how do we help folks with initial choice of azithromycin versus doxy? And what are your thoughts versus 7 versus 21 days?
So I editorialized about azithromycin for chlamydia in general. But I think as that's now a few years, and as the data have evolved, I'm less concerned about azithromycin for genital infection, but I am concerned about it for rectal. And I would imagine as the data evolve, if we were to have another treatment guidelines meeting today, Kim, and I would predict for the future that we're going to end up having a consensus on doxycycline as preferred for known rectal infection. Now, azithromycin is not totally without active, so if rectal infection is possible but not proved, it's probably not something that we're going to discard as an option. In an MSM who has rectal chlamydia, number one, I'd like to, it behooves us to be aware of local epidemiology. If you're in Detroit, obviously you're going to be more concerned that it's LGV than we are in Seattle. We've seen a few cases, but it's not been in the numbers that you have. I am reasonably confident, Kim, without data, that at the milder end of the spectrum, asymptomatic rectal infection or mild proctitis, that probably a week of doxy is fine. We don't know that, but certainly there have been cases that have probably been occurring all along that were treated with only a week and did just fine. I have no doubt that if you know it's LGV or if they present with clinically overt bad proctitis, I would go for 3 weeks. On the other hand, if you can't type easily and readily and you know it's positive and they're just a garden variety mild proctitis or so on, I probably would treat for a week and follow while I then wait on chlamydia typing if it's available to me and then decide whether to extend. I imagine most of those would probably do okay on a week, but I would also say that this is an arena where tests of cure probably are indicated for those people who return for follow-up because of the uncertainties about the need for how long with what drug.
So I know we're running short on time. If anybody has any additional questions, please come up and talk to our panelists. Otherwise, I want to thank our panelists for excellent insight and our presenters for very fascinating cases.